And now, sports and other stuff. The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
After talking over my coaches and my family, I would like to announce that I'm declaring for the 2018 NBA Draft.
We did not raise our ticket prices this year, despite going to a bowl game last year. We need more people back at Faurot Field. I'm afraid UConn.
Dangerfield knocks it down at the end of the quarter.
We got beat by a really good UConn team. All is well in women's basketball.
Samuelson with a chance and a four-point play.
Mistakes. And that's what we've seen from South Carolina.
Look at the stat sheet in the first half. You shoot 56% and you're down by 21. Do you just shake your head and not really know what to do?
Yeah.
Deep three on the money. Mabry has hit two of those bombs.
I thought they played well.
And he scores! The banker! And the Sharks keep their streak alive.
It wasn't pretty for a lot of it.
Here's Markel breaking free. He gets a right-hand layup. He coasts in there.
I was just focused on helping the team get the win, really. I wasn't worried about how I played.
Takes the three from the top. It is up. Good! And the door is closing on New York.
And welcome in. So far, we have to consider this a success. We're 4-for-4 on the afternoon. I got the news done. We got the music started. The opening began. The montage is off and rolling. And welcome in. It is a brave new world here Tuesday on the Closers. I'm George Young, Jay Sparks. Last day off for spring break ahead of coming back here tomorrow. And by then, we might have everything all ironed out. I have no idea. Your opening montage for today. Michael Porter Jr. announcing via Instagram yesterday that he was headed off to the NBA. Very nice profile shot, by the way, for the last 20 seconds or so of the Instagram announcement. Missouri Executive Athletic Director Nick Jost, a guest here yesterday on the program. If you missed the interview, you can check out the podcast on KFRU.com or KLIK1240.com after the show, if you would. Ticket prices for football remain the same. Basically, the idea, get more butts in the seats. And he also picks UConn, which was good because UConn had themselves a day. They shot 68% overall and 90% from three in the first quarter as Dangerfield ended the first quarter with a three ball. Don Staley, the parting shot, all is good with college basketball again. Katie Lou Samuelson with a four-point play. She was 4 of 6 from three, 17 points. And South Carolina postgame continued. Notre Dame goes ahead in the third quarter. There was a total of 9 lead changes in the Notre Dame and Oregon game, and Notre Dame ended up picking up the 10-point victory as they went ahead. It was 6:05 to go in the third quarter and on the way to a 10-point victory. So chalk reigns in the women's game for the final four. Alain Vigneault once again saying his young guys for the Rangers played well. The problem for him is they played well in a loss. NBC Sportsnet, San Jose Sharks, not a pretty win, Martin Jones says, but it was a win nevertheless, keyed by LeBanc, who get the shootout game-winning goal for the Sharks. So the Sharks arrive to St. Louis tonight, winners of 8 in a row. The Blues ended the Columbus Blue Jackets' 10-game win streak Saturday. Unfortunately for the Blues this year, they're 0-2-0 against the Sharks. Markelle Fultz making his return to the Philadelphia 76ers. 76ers Radio Network with the call. Layup. And then Markelle Fultz afterward talking about his first game back. And then the Hornets Radio Network. Kemba Walker with the three ball for Charlotte. And it was a 132-126 game at that time. So, busy day here on the program. We'll try to keep it on the rails. I make zero promises today for this. The lifeguards are not on duty for this particular show. So, if you see the fins circling in the water, we're just going to assume that they're dolphins. And they'll be here to play. David Lusky will join us in hour number one. We're talking Kansas City Royals baseball as they will open up at home at Kauffman Stadium on a Thursday afternoon. So Lusky will join us. Then head coach for Missouri Tigers softball, Gina Fogue, will join us here in hour number one. Hour number two, we're going to talk a lot of basketball with Jarrett Sutton from the SEC Network. A lot of things to talk about. including, of course, the departure of Michael Porter Jr. If you missed that yesterday, he announced late yesterday afternoon via Instagram, no press conferences for these kids anymore, no news releases, none of that sort of thing. He announced it on a 36-second Instagram post that he was departing the Missouri Tigers for the NBA. As we mentioned yesterday during the show, it's interesting to see what kind of a legacy you can come up with for him. I mean, you had the game with Kansas, exhibition contest though it may be. You had 2 minutes against Iowa State. The Tigers ended up winning that game, but you had just 2 minutes in that game. And wrapped it up with two games where he was less than himself in a loss to Georgia and a loss to Florida State. So it'll be an interesting discussion as we move along, not just the course of this week, but as he moves along in the NBA, as to what exactly is the legacy that he leaves behind for the University of Missouri and Missouri Tiger basketball. So we'll discuss that a little bit with Jarrett. Plus also the whole idea creeping its ugly head again that UConn women's basketball is bad for the game. I've got my thoughts on that one, and the biggest part is learn how to compete, quit whining. So, and Dawn, quit your whining. Just because, you know, you got housed last night, by the way. Just because you got beat last night, you don't need to have the sarcastic end to your comment about we got beat by a good UConn team.
We got beat by a really good UConn team. You know, obviously, we didn't have enough to compete in the way that we would have liked to. But now all is well in women's basketball.
The parting shot, all is well in women's college basketball, that UConn back on top. Well, they will take on Notre Dame as a one C squaring off on one side of the bracket. Mississippi State, back-to-back Final Fours. They're on the other half of the bracket along with Louisville. And Louisville making their third appearance. As I mentioned, Mississippi State going back-to-back. The other side, Notre Dame and Connecticut. Well, 47 meetings. It's in favor of the Huskies, 36-11. But in Final Four appearances, Notre Dame holds the edge, 3-1. So we'll see how that happens. That will be for the ladies. They will play Friday, Sunday, Final Four championship game, Friday, Sunday, up in Columbus, Ohio. The men will be back in action right here on KFRU and KLIK, courtesy of Westwood One. That will be back in action on Saturday, Monday. So Saturday, Monday for the men, Friday, Sunday for the ladies. And if you may remember back in the – it wasn't really all that long ago, about 3 or 4 years ago, that the ladies played on Tuesday after the men's national championship game. And cooler heads and more reasoned opinions finally prevailed on that one. So now you have the women's championship game ahead of the men because – quite frankly, most people, unless you are a dedicated, diehard women's college basketball fan, once the men's game was done on Monday, your attention to basketball was also done on a Monday. So there you go. That has been rearranged. Women's championship game on Sunday. Men's championship game on Monday. And we'll have the men's bracket for you here. Courtesy of Westwood One. Again, David Lusky will join us here in just a little bit. Cardinal baseball will start on Thursday as well, as do the Royals. Talked to Larry Borowski yesterday about the Cardinals pitching staff, especially the loss of a starter in Wainwright and a closer in Gregerson. For the Royals pitching staff, it's a little bit of a different animal in that it seems like you're kind of trying to fit a few extra pieces in where you hope it's a better fit than it was maybe the way this bullpen was constructed a year ago. But Danny Duffy will get the opening day start against former James Shields. So we'll talk with David Lusky about that as well. Plus the perception, and I know Jay and David had probably talked about this a little bit as well, but the perception that the Royals are sort of kind of committed, but not really committed to one direction or another. Either you're committed to creating a winner and you're going to spend the money, or you're committed to let's build up that farm system and let's make sure that we've got a good and well-stocked farm system ready to bring these youngsters up. The Royals kind of right in the middle of that one, and hopefully they just don't end up looking like a possum trying to cross the highway as this Major League Baseball season rolls on. We'll also visit with Lesky about markers. What are some of the significant markers for him on that one? And also after David Lesky, we'll sit down with head coach Gina Fogg, Missouri Tigers softball. Rough weekend for the Lady Tigers down in Arkansas, and there's not a whole lot of time to mull it over because they'll be back at it again this weekend at the Mizzou Softball Stadium as they host number 10 LSU. So, wow. Got a whole lot coming up here next on The Closers, and we're going to visit next on The Closers with David Lesky from Baseball Prospectus Kansas City, and we will talk with him about Kansas City Royal Baseball.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
All right, so far so good, I think. I don't know. As long as the little light doesn't go on over the top of me that says, hey, you're off the air, I guess we're going to take the wins where we can get them, which is an excellent segue for Royals Talk with David Lesky from Baseball Prospectus Kansas City. You can find him on Twitter at DBLesky. All right, well, they didn't get the game with the Omaha Storm Chasers in, and that probably really doesn't matter here nor there. But what a global assessment. What are you looking forward to in this 2018 baseball season for the Royals?
I mean, baseball is fun to watch no matter what, right?
So, okay.
there's that. There's a couple things.
Yeah.
For me, part of the problem is what I'm most looking forward to watch is a starting pitcher, mm-hmm. and it's only every 5 days. So,
yeah.
But I think, you know, Jake Junis, I'm very curious to see how he continues to develop this season. You look. Last season he came up and he struggled. He struggled at first, which happens. He's a rookie. And went back to the minor leagues and came back and was really, really good the last month and a half of the season or so. In his last, 11 starts I think he made or something like that. So that's really encouraging. He was fantastic in spring training, just outstanding. And, you know, when I saw him in person, he was great. When I saw him on television, he was great. It was really good spring for Junis. And, you know, he's not. I don't think he's an ace. I don't think he's probably not even a number two. But a good number three is very, very valuable, and I think that's what he can be. So I'm excited to watch him. And then, you know, the offense, the team itself could be kind of fun because I think they have a lot of power, and so and there will be day, and they're going to need it because the bullpen's very iffy. But there's going to be stretches where they hit a lot of home runs, so that's fun to watch too. I think that. Yeah, the team's not going to be good, but they're going to be better than people think, I believe, and also pretty watchable because I think some fun starting pitching and power is can be fun to watch, I guess.
Will they give up more home runs or hit more home runs?
Oh, boy. I think they'll probably give up more. But, I don't think it's a slam dunk.
Okay, all right.
Kennedy and Hamill both have their issues with fly balls and home runs. And if nothing has changed with the ball, that's not going to change with them. But they have gone out and they've made a concerted effort to get some sinker ball guys. I don't know that that'll necessarily show up quite as much in 2018 as it will moving forward. But you know, I think they might do okay in limiting home runs from time to time. And I think they're going to hit a lot. So I think it could be pretty close, actually.
Okay. And Jay and I have had an ongoing discussion about all these one-year deals that were extended. As you sit back and you watch this season begin to get started and as it starts to develop, are these one-year deals something where you begin looking at them as package deals for somebody like Kelvin Herrera or Danny Duffy, depending on where this team is at like, say, the end of May?
It could be. I think that... Yeah, the impetus for the one-year deals were there are a couple of things. One, cheap deals. I mean, you look at guys Lucas Duda, John Jay, and Mike Moustakas for $13 million. That's pretty darn good.
That's less than Moustakas wanted alone.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic deal. I think it's one of those things they just couldn't pass up for players like that. But I also think, there's a lot of trade value on a one-year deal because you don't have much money to take on if you're a team that's acquiring them. You think about the Royals in 2015 when they picked up Ben Zobrist and Johnny Cueto. Yeah, they only had 1 year left, but or 3 months left, really. but they were still owed a lot of money because their contract was big enough that the Royals had a little trouble fitting it financially. But with any of these three guys, or even Kelvin Herrera, or Brandon Mauer, if he's any good, not that he's on a one-year deal, he's still arbitration eligible, but any of these guys are being paid so little in baseball terms for one season that by the time July comes around, I mean, they're all making $2 million or less the rest of the season. Any team can take that on. So they're very tradable deals. They make the team better in the short term while they're rebuilding. You know, it was when the Astros rebuilt, when the Cubs rebuilt, they were really hard to watch for three, four, five seasons. And now it's obviously come to fruition and it's been great, but Dayton Moore doesn't want to operate that way. He wants to put a somewhat competitive product on the field and make it so that when you go to the ballpark, you're not looking at the lineup and having to go to your baseball almanac to figure out who the players are. So I think that he was able to find these deals, and that's the purpose behind him. And hey, if they work out as trade deals, if they make, if Mike Moustakas makes Whit Merrifield bring back a better deal in July, as an example, great, perfect. And the Royals got back a better prospect because some team got a second baseman and third baseman. It's just win-win all around.
Okay. Well, I would prefer that the fan base goes to Baseball Prospectus Kansas City to find out who these new guys are.
Some people carry around their big baseball almanac that everybody used to buy years ago.
Yeah. Seems somewhat weighty as that thing showed up.
It does. Yeah. People like it.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, they like to have something in their hand. Biggest hole for the starting pitching, the starting rotation. You know, you're going to have Duffy leading things off on Friday or Thursday. Then it's an exhausting opening day, so you get the day off. And then you're going to roll out with Kennedy. Hamill Carnes Jr. is rounding out that starting five. What's the biggest hole, potentially, in that starting five?
Well, there's a couple possibilities. The biggest one to me is health, because if they all stay healthy all season long, and I don't mean necessarily make 30 starts, I mean pitch healthy. You know, Ian Kennedy made 30 starts last year.
Yeah, but he was awful.
25 of them were with a hamstring injury the whole time, so that hurt him. And yeah, he's 33 now, I think. It doesn't get better as you get older. I can attest to that. And if he's pitching but not healthy, it doesn't matter. But if they get relative health from those starting five, I think that they're going to be pretty good. Beyond that, the issue is Jason Hamill, I think, is probably the biggest question mark, just because he's, 36? I mean, guys start to fall off, and he had a really rough season last year. So they got to stay healthy, and if they do, the back of the rotation, which I know the back of the rotation is technically Carnes and Junis, but I call Kennedy and Hamill the back of the rotation because they're the fourth and fifth best starters on the team. So, and Carnes is always a health risk. So health's the biggest question, the biggest hole, but other than that, it's the back of the rotation.
Okay, and that relief staff, I mean, you got Mauer, Hahn, Peralta. Hahn is actually listed on the 60-day DL, which is somewhat odd because he's still listed in the depth chart. Peralta, Flynn, Smith, your closer is Kelvin Herrera. What size lead do you need in the seventh or eighth inning to feel comfortable?
Right now, I think you probably need three or four runs to feel comfortable. But I look at this bullpen, and there's a few interesting names. Herrera obviously spent five seasons being one of the better relievers in the American League, and then he had a rough year last year. It happened. Now the question is he going to bounce back, or is it going to continue? And as a reliever, you just don't know sometimes. Right. And so he could be really good. Brad Keller, another Rule 5 guy other than Birch Smith, he was fantastic in spring training. I'm not nearly as high on him as I was on Birch Smith.
Okay.
And Keller really impressed. Smith was not good, but he's got a big arm. And so there are possibilities. And then the other thing, too, I wrote this the other day, it would not surprise me if the bullpen that is listed on the roster on August 31st is entirely different than what we see on Thursday. There is so much possibility for turnover, and I really like the arms they have in the minors. Miguel Almonte, Richard Lovelady, Glenn Sparkman, a bunch of pitchers who I think could come up and make an impact in the bullpen this season. So early on, it'll be iffy, but I think it's going to be kind of a bullpen puzzle all season long to try to figure out the right pieces. And then my guess is, my big hot take is, they'll go into 2019 with a really good bullpen.
Okay, built up through the minor league.
Yeah, I think
okay,
so.
Okay.
And, you know, they're probably some trades as well, and maybe some failed starting pitchers. But yeah, I mean, they've got some guys in the system who could be really solid for them. Mm-hmm.
David Leske, Baseball Prospectus, Kansas City. You can find him on Twitter, at DBLeske. A lot being made right now about Alex Gordon, not just the year of 2017, which was, suboptimal, but then getting extra hitting work with a non-minor league assignment, even though it was in the minors. How much patience will this team have? I know it's a big contract, but how much patience will this team have with Alex in 2018 if this year looks a lot like last year?
I think he'll probably get about 80 games of patience, and that number is not picked out of where. It's Jorge Bonifacio suspension, and when Bonifacio comes back, if Gordon's hitting 198 with a 270 on base and 312 slugging percentage, I don't think he's going to play. I think it's going to be obviously it depends on Soler and Jay and their health and all that, but I think the outfield will be Bonifacio, Jay, and Soler, and Alex Gordon's going to be on the bench, and he should be because the way he's hit, the way he's played, he's just not a starting caliber player anymore. Now, that could turn around. That could change. He said yesterday or 2 days ago that he felt much better. His timing was way better. Who knows? I mean, he hasn't played, so it's hard to say if he's right or wrong. We'll find out, I suppose. He did play much better in September. He hit pretty well. He had some power back finally. So, maybe this spring was just a really bad stretch and a really bad time, but at this point, it's hard to believe that, and so I think he's going to get about half a season, and when Bonifacio comes back, it's judgment day for Alex Gordon.
What are some of the other key – I mean, I know you're a guy who looks at the calendar and says, here are a couple of key marker days in this season. What are some of the key days for you this year as you're looking at a team that is really kind of that betwixt and between of being a contender and being a rebuild?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there really are important at this point.
Okay.
That could change.
Yeah.
If they come out of the gates hot, and I don't know what constitutes that. I don't know if it's 2 weeks and they're 10-4, or if it's at the end of April they're, I don't know how many games they have in April, but they're 20-10, whatever it might be. I don't know what it is, but if they come out starting hot, then you can talk about maybe a wild card spot for them. I think they have the talent, but there's just so many things that have to go right, have to go perfectly right. I don't think it'll happen. But, more than anything, this is a rebuilding year that's not a youth movement, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because nothing they've done has impacted the future. They haven't, they maybe have gone from a likely top 5 pick to now it's just a likely top 10 pick in 2019. But as I've said before, this rebuild, how quick it goes is going to be determined by the 2017 draft class that looks pretty good right now. And the 2018 draft with all the picks in the draft pool they have because of competitive balance picks and Hosmer and Kane getting compensation for them. So what happens in 2018 at the big league level is kind of irrelevant to the future. So it's just this is, I think the Royals went out and got these guys and said, okay, we're going to try to put an entertaining competitive product on the field every single day. And if they happen to win 88 games and make the playoffs, fantastic. That's wonderful. It's everything you could have hoped for. And, they're probably not going to. So there's some trade chips and there's some guys who fans will say, I've heard of this player. I'm going to buy a ticket to this game, whatever it might be. And I think that's the plan for this year. So I don't think there are really any benchmarks this year. It's just kind of go out and watch a team hopefully compete every night and maybe win a few games. It's just – which is not a great marketing tactic.
Yeah, not generally.
This is the beginning of the rebuild. Mm-hmm. And – for fans who wanted a teardown like the White Sox have just done or like the Astros did, I just don't think you're going to see it with Dayton Moore. Now, you might see August and September might look like that team that's so young. But, like I said, the speed of the rebuild will not be about trades. It'll be about how the 2017 draft does and how the 2018 draft does.
Okay. Pacoda says, and I know we're big fans of Pacoda, especially the Royals people, says 72 games. I'll give you 77.5. Where are you going?
Oh, that's the under for sure.
I
have them. I think if absolutely everything goes right for the Royals, and that includes things going wrong for other teams, I think they could win in the mid-80s. But,
that's being over.
Being realistic, I think they're a 73-win team.
Okay.
72, 73 wins.
Okay, so Pacoda might actually have this one right.
Yeah, they're pretty close. the interesting thing is, part of the reason why Pakoda was so wrong on the Royals in the past was it had a really hard time quantifying defense, quantifying a great bullpen, and with young players who don't have much of a track record. Mm-hmm. Well, this Royals team doesn't have a great bullpen. The defense is maybe going to be okay, and they're not young. So everything they had a problem with, everything Pakoda struggled with in the past with the Royals, the Royals don't have it anymore. So it's not not a huge deal, because I think Pakoda will probably be pretty close.
Yeah, well, because it actually did, it made that note that they didn't have a whole lot of stuff to go on. Real quick here, as we get out, how much of what we're seeing with the Royals this year and Dayton Moore's kind of moves is kind of a reaction to what the fan base has been voicing during the offseason of trying to keep that fan base happy?
I don't know. I think that there's always some aspect of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that there's always the PR aspect of running a team. But at the same time, you know, you win games, you're going to win fans. And the Royals could go 0-162 the next 3 years, and if they win the World Series in 2021, they're going to draw $2.8 million.
You know, it doesn't
especially matter. You might drive people away in the moment, but they'll always be back. It's just, I mean, the Royals were terrible for roughly three decades, and they drew $2.77 million in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get some likable players, and one thing about Dayton Moore, he will always have high character guys who will be likable. You know, you're going to draw the fans eventually. So I think part of it, because there's always that aspect. But I don't think there's a huge connection there.
Okay, all right. David Lesky, Baseball Prospectus, Kansas City. We're going to shift to Thursdays during the baseball season, so I appreciate your time here today, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week as we have that one weekend, and then we can overreact at that point in time.
Absolutely. They will either be the best team in baseball or the worst ever.
Okay. Well, sounds like a wide gulf in between, so that's we'll kind of shoot for that one. Okay. All right, David, thank you for the time, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, George.
You are very welcome. That is David Lesky, Baseball Prospectus, Kansas City. You can find him on Twitter, at DB Lesky. Read the work at Baseball Prospectus, Kansas City. Gina Fogue, head softball coach for the Missouri Tiger women. She will join us next.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Hey, welcome back to The Closers here alongside the missing Jay Sparks right now. He is enjoying the first part of spring break out on the road. I'm George Young, happy to have the head coach of Missouri softball with us, head coach Gina Fogue. And, Coach, it's you got a week off this week, especially coming out of a weekend down at Fayetteville that was somewhat disappointing, especially the way it turned out. How important is it to have just a week that's just empty, where the ladies really don't have to think about the next game? They can just kind of maybe relax just a little bit and kind of reset themselves.
Yeah, no, it's going to be good. And I think the even bigger picture thing is, you know, we've been injured in some of our girls, and mm-hmm. So this is time to get them a little bit of a break, rest them a little bit, so that we're not hobbling into another weekend.
Well, and you got a big weekend coming up, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But let's go back to this last weekend. You dropped that first game 3-1, but then you get an absolute dynamite gem out of Lauren Rice in game number two in the circle to pick up the 3-0 win. How enjoyable was it to watch the ladies not only just bounce back, but to get a game like that out of Lauren?
No, it was great, and you know, and she threw great. She hit her spots. You know, she was doing the right things and getting ground ball outs that we needed, and our defense was wiped out behind her. So we played really well that game, and it was great to see.
Okay, then let's talk about Sunday then. you fell behind early 3-1, but then you put together a really nice inning. Let's talk about the top half of that fifth inning when you put up that sixth spot and you grabbed the 7-3 lead. What went well in that half inning for you ladies?
You know, it was great to see finally we got some timely hitting. So a lot of that happened with two outs. You know, we got a two-out double. And then the girls didn't try to do too much. They just, you know, were trying to put the ball in play, move it, get a runner over, or get the runner in. And, you know, with two outs and a runner on second, you got a ground ball. They're going on contact. So we kept getting some runs in there. And it was, you know, it just continued. And it was great to see that finally we got timely hitting after timely hitting after timely hitting. So it was, you know, that was something that they weren't trying to do too much. just tried to put the ball in play, and, you know, it made things happen. It was great to see.
Okay, and I know that was a lot. That was a little bit of what we talked about the week before, about trying to get those timely hits and not doing too much with the ball. Just get this thing, get it in play, and make the fielders make the decision on what to do on that one. How much of that was part of that whole week discussion that, you know, just relaxing and get the ball in play, and we'll go from there?
It was, and it was huge, you know, but it's at that moment, you know, it's just mm-hmm. they're looking for that pitch, and, you know, we talked about, you know, Arkansas's pitchers and what we expected about plans and stuff for them, and the girls were aggressive on the right pitches, and they would leave them, you know, they would leave some more hitter pitches out there for them, and it was those ones that they were trying to attack, and then with, you know, two outs and runners on, just trying to put it in play and make something happen, and they did.
Gina Fogue with us, head coach, Missouri Tigers softball here on the Closers. All right, so the top half of the inning, everything is looking good. Life is nice, and then out smiley faces. And then the bottom half of the inning arrived. And I know we've talked in the past about how quickly things can happen. Was that an inning that unraveled that fast that you're like, wow, we're up by four, and next thing you know, we're down? I mean, was that type of an inning?
It was, you know, and it started, you know, with the message to Lauren going out there was, you know, we got a lead. Let's go out there pitching with the lead, getting ahead, working ahead of hitters. And, you know, we fell behind that first hitter and walked her. So now you got a lead off walk. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of continued from there. We started missing some spots. And, you know, even with some runners on, you know, I thought we were fine. No, we just need to get out. Made an error, but we just need to get out. And then we let off a three-run bomb, which kind of, you know, put us in there. But it's when your hitters are and your offense puts up a good number like that, a good inning like that, is coming back and shutting down their offense and giving them no hope to come back. And, you know, we didn't do a good job there. We didn't hit our spots. You know, we got behind. It's all the things that we were talking about that we did really well game one and two with our pitchers. And then game three, that consistency of game one and two, we lost it there in that inning. You know, we were working behind and doing all the things we didn't want to do.
How does Adam now help in moments like that to not just let the ladies help them forget that, but also learn from it going forward?
You know, yeah, it's learning from everything. It's right. Every pitch, you know, and that's kind of been the thing is, you know, it's are you executing your spot every single time? You know, mm-hmm. if we're executing the spots and what we're calling, even if we're calling, you know, something a little off the plate, are you executing there or are you missing on the plate and getting a strike when we're trying to stretch one, you know? So we're trying to... We're trying to keep it to every single pitch. Are you doing your job? And that's what we're focusing on. And so when you can fine-tune it into that, there's more of, hey, here's what we did well, here's what we didn't. We have more things we can go over with the girls after the game and learn from it that way.
Okay, now you've got a freshman catcher behind the plate right now, Hattie Moore. How much of this, I mean, it's not that it's on her because you're talking about the pitcher actually making the pitches and hitting their spots, but how much of this does she feel like it is on her and that it's part of her learning process?
You know, there is part of the catcher's learning too. And, you know, mm-hmm. we've been talking about how we're setting up and how we're trying to get those corners that, you know, that you can get with the umpires, you know, the close ones where we feel like sometimes we're missing those just because of our framing, but it's all, you know, it's all that learning process of how do we frame better? How do we frame a low pitch better? You know, what are we doing on those? And ultimately, we're calling the pitches. They can shake us, but, you know, we're calling the pitches in and we're going off of, you know, previous game scouts and scouting reports and the games we're playing and what we see about from the hitters, and we'll adjust as we see fit throughout the game. But, you know, so it's not ultimately Hattie calling the game. It's us calling the game. And it's Hattie, you know, framing the pitches. And then, you know, if she sees something, going out and talking to our pitcher, and that's all the learning process with a young pitcher and a young catcher.
Where is her confidence in being able to do that? I mean, it's one thing to go out there freshman to freshman, but it's another thing to, you know, trot out to that circle when you've got a junior or a senior in the circle and say, okay, listen, here's the deal.
Yeah, but I think it's just about the relationship okay. they have, you know, and it's you know, I don't feel they feel that, you know. I think mm-hmm. they all on our team as a whole, you know, we keep stressing not only open communication with the coaches, then that's how we get better, but open communication with the players themselves so that we can hold each other accountable on certain things. And if they are missing their spots, they can go out and be like, hey, you know, you're missing your spots here. We got to do better. And it's those conversations that we're encouraging the girls to have because it's going to make us better.
Head coach Gina Fogue with us here, Missouri Tigers softball. They've got a big weekend set coming up against LSU, and we'll wrap up with that one. But you mentioned in the very start, this is a good week to kind of get everybody healthy. I know you get Amanda Sanchez back this year from her wrist injury from last year, but what are some of those other nagging injuries that you're looking at with question marks?
Yeah, Sanch over the Mississippi State series, you know, had that lower back thing, and mm-hmm. so she's getting better. She played this weekend, but it's still, you know, with the recovering thing, she's not 100%. We got Colby, who's still hobbling in a little bit with her ankle injury from that Florida weekend, right. And you got Kayla out in right field. You know, she's struggling a little bit. She got some back stuff, and so it's just trying to get, you know, those are three big sticks in her lineup that we're trying to keep healthy and maintain them so that we can go into the season here, the rest of the season with them.
Does it feel like we're this far into the season?
I mean, it goes fast.
Man.
I don't know. It goes really fast.
It certainly does.
We got a lot of good games left.
Okay. Well, and part of that will start this weekend with LSU, another ranked team coming into town. The Bayou Bengals are ranked number 10 in the country. How do you approach this weekend, especially knowing two things? One, the weekend you just came off of, and secondly, some of the struggles with ranked teams.
Yeah, keep focusing on, you know, each game and the task at hand. We know we're working on scouting reports right now on LSU. We kind of know what they have. They got two really good returning pitchers, and so that's the focus for our hitters. And then, you know, as the coaches meet and we meet with our pitchers and we go over our scouting reports and how we're going to pitch their pitchers, that's kind of our plan. We'll just take it, you know, one game at a time, one batter at a time, and that's going to continue to be our focus.
Right. Head Coach Gina Fogue. I know that's the weekend series is coming up this weekend, folks, over at the Mizzou Softball Stadium. So get on out there and watch some fun softball this weekend. What's on the listening list this week for Coach? Because you obviously don't have a midweek game either.
Yeah, finishing up some others. And I actually just turned on David Ross's teammate book. He's got some good stuff in there. Talks about some of the experiences and all that stuff. So it's been pretty good so far.
All righty. So there you go. The teammates, the latest books on tape for head coach Gina Fogue. Coach, thank you much for the time today. I really do appreciate it. Hopefully the sun will shine sometime this week to get some softball in and at least on the team as well. So, Coach, thank you much.
Yep, thank you.
You are very welcome. That is head coach Gina Fogue. We'll be right back. We've got more of the closes as we amble on through a Tuesday afternoon, and we will do that right after this.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.